This is Tom Bernard. Can't get enough of sports talk with Phil Mackey and Judd Zolgad? Tune in to the new Tom Bernard Show podcast Monday through Friday as Phil and Judd join me to discuss the latest sports headlines and whatever else comes to mind.
Just download the Tom Bernard Show app wherever you get your podcasts or visit TomBernardShow.com. It's another way to get more from me and Judd talking sports and having fun with Tom, and it's all at your fingertips. Download the Tom Bernard Show app now and join the conversation.
These guys survived the David Kahn era of Timberwolves basketball and lived to tell about it. It's Flagrant Howls.
I was wondering if the mustache was going to make it through the holiday season, the new year. And I'm glad to see, Kyle, that the mustache has made it into 2024.
It's hanging on. My wife power cleaned our whole place, so like nothing is, we have nothing left. She's got rid of everything. Fresh start 2024. Happy New Year to you and everyone listening. The one thing I was like, we can't get rid of it yet. They haven't. The only team in the league that hasn't lost two games in a row. So we'll see.
Your wife is going to be rooting hard for, is Zion playing tonight? Do we know for sure?
She is the biggest Pelicans fan.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow. Biggest Pelicans fan there is. She wants this rat off my face. But yeah, what are we? I think we're 40% through the season is a little rough number. Check my calculator.
What's
today.
The math?
24-8.
24-8. So 32. What's 32 divided by 82?
Here, I think it's like 39.4% right. Carry okay. The two.
32. There's nothing we love more on this show than just stopping it to do like math or Google things.
It's my favorite.
32 divided by 82 is 39.02439.
Okay.
So we're 39% close. Of the way through.
We're close. And if I've been off Twitter a little more. I don't know. It just doesn't suit me. But a quick glance this weekend showed that I think we're firing Finch again. I think that's the move.
I'd give it one more game, personally. I feel, especially if Zion plays and you lose back-to-back for the first time, I'd probably sit him down after this
Pelicans. Yeah, I've seen other people say that the Wolves' recent play has slipped, which is, there's some truth to that. They also have slipped to 7-3 in their last 10, all seven wins against playoff teams. So I think some people have already backed off of their resolutions to just try to enjoy this team a little more and be in the moment. They have some issues. I'm sure we'll talk about them today. But yeah, just this team. I'm still very optimistic on this team. We haven't talked in like 2 weeks. And I mean, when was the last? I don't know the last time we recorded. I'm looking at the schedule. But like they had the whole Lakers win on LeBron's birthday with the weird technical on Jaden and stepping on the line. They lost to the Thunder. They beat a kind of rancid Mavericks team. And then yesterday, maybe the most difficult game on an NBA schedule to play a matinee game on New Year's Day in New York City. I can't imagine anyone, including like Josh Minot, went to bed before 4 a.m. on Sunday night. So tough game, tough officiating, but 24-8 and first place in the West since November 18th.
Yeah, they haven't relinquished it. So yeah, we'll get into some of the things that happened because there are some things I generally hold your optimistic viewpoint here that they're the only team that hasn't lost back-to-back. They're still in first place. They're well above 500 into this brutal 16-game stretch, which we'll talk about. There are a couple things that are worth kind of poking at, like the offense without Anthony Edwards. I've got some numbers for you. We'll do Kyle's question of the week here, but let's do the big picture update first here, because on December 11th, they embarked on a 16-game stretch against exclusively playoff/above 500 teams. And I believe that still holds looking at all the teams on this schedule. Like the Rockets have slipped a little bit. They're still in the playoff or play-in bracket. The Magic are still like 8 or 9 games over 500. You get those teams on this upcoming road trip after you play the home game against New Orleans. So they are now 12 games, if my math is right. Or is it 11 games? 11 games into the 16-game gauntlet. They're 7-4. They're 7-4. In fact, I was doing some hand math, I think it was like 3 episodes ago. I think, okay, so they started off crazy hot, like 18-4, whatever their record was, right? Or 17-4. If they go 500 in those 16 games, that's holding your own against a bunch of playoff teams, not a train wreck at all. And they would probably still be 12 or 13 games over 500 and probably still in first or second place in the Western Conference. And that's kind of what this is shaping up to be. I think they're outperforming what maybe you would have thought in those 16 games, 7-4. Now they have the 5 games left. So if they can go even like 2-3 in those games, they'll be 9 wins and 7 losses, toughest stretch of the season. And maybe the Thunder pass them if they go 2-3 in these next few games, but they're still a game and a half up on the Thunder. So I guess my long rambling monologue here is they're doing fine over these really tough 11 games. They're still in first place. The schedule lightens up. Yes, there are things to poke at, but we should be happy with the way this 16-game stretch is going so far.
Bingo. I have no idea what some people are thinking. None. Because on December 11th, this should be relatable to everyone living in the Midwest that had basically went through a brown Christmas, no snow or whatever. Really nice winter. That's what this wolf season is like. We haven't had a winter like this in 35 years. It's great. It's warm. I wear shorts to work. And then we saw the 10-day forecast. It was like, there's a storm coming. It's a 16-game stretch, all against teams above or at 500. It's going to be really tough. So, you know, get your supplies, get ready, 16 games. If they can just survive it, if they can just go 8-8. And then they started winning all these games. And then the storm came. And that storm might have been a Thunder win in Oklahoma City, or a Thunder loss for the Wolves. But the Thunder win in Oklahoma City, the Knicks win at home. And all of a sudden, this storm has arrived, and everyone is losing their bleeping minds and being like, oh, I don't know, man. What are we going to do? Is this like, well, this is winter? It's like, yeah, this you said this was going to come. And if everyone and everyone.
And then the storm isn't as bad as you thought it was going to be, right?
Exactly. Like, exactly. I mean, Britt Robson said this on Dane's Pod. I think a lot of people, as we all kind of formed the same thought about this 16 game stretch, everyone was like, 8-8 would be great. 9-7, I almost guarantee you if they go 9-7 in that stretch, they'll be in first place in the West. And they're 7-4. I mean, they could, God forbid, lose the next 5, which I do not think they will. But they could go lose the next 5, go 7-9, and probably be like 1 or 1.5 games out of the first place in the West. So I don't – if they win 50 games, which would be awesome, and they're on pace to win, I think, damn near 60. But if they were to win 50 games, there's one thing that guarantees, and that guarantees they're going to lose 32 of them. So they're going to lose some games. There is – a growing trend of just a weird, bad, stale offense. This team doesn't really hit shots. Their bench has been weird. The Kyle Anderson conundrum will basically be at the forefront of every discussion for the next 6 weeks until the deadline on February 8th to trade. But this is part of the benefit of getting out on this marathon and running faster than everyone else the first 6 or 7 miles. It's just like you have some space now to catch up, drop a couple bad games. I mean, people kind of lost their minds. Not everyone, just a select few who I hate, that the Wolves only beat the Mavericks by like 8 the other night. And it's like, that was the same night the Celtics went to overtime against the 28 straight loss Pistons.
They're down by 20 points in the first half to the Pistons.
So it's
you know, regular season NBA.
Yeah, there's, and this month is the worst. This is it's the coldest. They have a bunch of games. You're kind of looking forward to the All-Star break and like a little vacation, trade deadline, all that stuff. This is going to be the month that you just got to grind through wins. And it does open up after. They go New Orleans on Wednesday at home, then at Houston, at Dallas, at Orlando, at Boston. Then there's some Portland mix in there, some Detroit, Memphis, a little better, but meh. The Hornets, Washington, Brooklyn, San Antonio, like, it does ease up. But I am losing my mind at the idea that we all saw this storm coming. The storm has not been as bad as we thought it was. It's been a wonderful winter, and yet people are still like, oh my God, here we go again. And it's like, no, here we don't go again.
Yeah, and I think sometimes it's as simple, too, as looking at the losses. So last year, one of the biggest problems, and I would argue it was the difference between them being a low 40s win team and a 50-win team, was they couldn't take care of business against the worst teams in the league. This year, look at, like, even in this stretch, look at the losses. Okay, so they have 4 losses since December 11th during this stretch of games. They lose at New Orleans, a fully stocked, right? Correct mm-hmm. me if I'm wrong. Zion was playing in that game. Mm-hmm. A fully stocked New Orleans team on the road. Okay, then they lose at the 76ers, where Joel Embiid, I think Embiid and Maxey combined for like 87 points in that game.
And 97 free throws.
All the free throws, right.
Yeah, exactly.
And they were in that game, you know, at least within striking distance until the end of the fourth quarter. Okay, at Oklahoma City, that's one of the 5 or 6 best teams in the NBA. You beat them at home a few weeks ago. They returned the favor in a game at Oklahoma City. And then at the Knicks, all right, probably the worst of the losses, but the Knicks are a playoff team. The Knicks, and by the way, the Knicks just, I was texting with a group thread of Timberwolves fans, and one of my buddies mentioned, whenever you get a team making a trade for like a good, like a starting caliber player or a star player, and that player debuts at home, you're probably going to lose that game. Everyone's all jacked up. You know, oh, this new player is going to debut. And you had that situation in New York yesterday. I'm not trying to be an apologist here, but for God's sakes, this team is 24-8. I don't know. Maybe you and I are just like fighting or we're like old men yelling at clouds or something right now. I don't even know if there's like a large group of people to be fighting, but I think this is just a good time to zoom out to 30,000 feet and take a look at this thing. This team is really, really good. There were no promises made that they were going to threaten the all-time wins record that the Warriors set, you know, about 8-10 years ago. And they're going to lose some tough road games, and they might even lose to like the Pistons again at some point. But let's not freak out. Let's not go over the top.
The only pushback I'd have is I actually think it's you can think of some of them. It's actually old dudes yelling at clouds that are the ones that are trying to freak out about this. You and I might be like Gen Zers that are trying to like point to our TikToks and be like, hey, they haven't lost two straight games since March 31st. Every loss they've, if you wipe out that October stretch where they started 1-2, bad Raptors loss, historically embarrassing Hawks loss, all their losses since November 1st are Suns, like you said, didn't really try, but the Suns are like what, top four, top five in the West, the Kings, the Pelicans, that was, you said Zion played, on top of that, Ant didn't play, and then Philly and the Knicks, and they debuted OG Anunoby yesterday. So again, I'm not trying to sugarcoat that it's, I'm not going to say it's a blast to watch this team play offense. For some reason in the last week and a half, 10 days, I don't know if it's fatigue or they're maybe getting scouted a little harder because they are the best team in the league. Their turnover rate has gone through the roof. But when they don't turn the ball over, they score points. But they turn the ball over all the time and they do a bunch of dumb stuff. So
yeah,
is the code been cracked on them a little bit, or is this just what we see? I mean, a really good exercise is to go look at the Denver Nuggets weekly schedule from last season. They just kind of mailed it in every once in a while, and then they went on to win the title. So I'm not saying that this team should be the favorite to win the title. I'm not even sure, Phil, if this team should be a favorite to win the West. Forget win totals. Like, my goal is still, what is this team, 14-1 right now at home? Their number one goal, in my opinion, should be just to finish top four in the West, because that gets you a home court, gets you an extra game, and winning a first-round series, in my eyes, would deem this season a success. Because that's something they haven't done since Kevin Garnett was here. So anything after that is gravy. But yeah, they might stumble. They might lose. I mean, Denver is really hot. The Thunder have won four in a row. But despite some of these weird losses, they haven't given up first place in the West in a really long time. So if you want to talk about some of the issues today, we want to wait for them. It's crazy to see people wanting to panic when this team, even yesterday, like, they played so bad and they do so many dumb things in a certain quarter.
And they're
just
like in it right at the end.
And it's like, oh, they're down four. You know what I mean? So they have some things to work on. They have, in my mind, I said this last week with Dane, and you and I will say it every week, they are a player short for sure.
Yes.
If you want to get into some Jordan McLaughlin stuff, we can. But like, Shake Milton just is now out. He's not going to play in this rotation. Troy Brown Jr. kind of gets dropped in and out, but right now it's basically the five starters, Nikhil, Nas, and Kyle. And if one of those three bench guys doesn't give you, probably Nas, give you a good punch off the bench, it's really bad. It's really bad. And Jordan McLaughlin gave them some life yesterday. I would hope he's a staple for the next couple weeks, because he'll never be a scoring threat either, but he at least just puts pace and energy and basketball IQ into this equation. But they're a player short, and I would be really shocked if Tim Connelly doesn't make a move between now and February.
So now that we've gotten like the beginning part of the show out of the way, you and I both felt very strongly that despite losing a game that was frustrating yesterday, let's start with the big picture of everything's fine, more than fine, like way more than fine. This team is off to a dream start, still is, even through this tough stretch. Okay, so that's the big picture. Let's do some of the poking here. You bring up the offense. I want to get into Jordan McLaughlin because, man, if that version of J-Mac is back, like the pre-calf injury version from last year that you and I spent every podcast salivating over and doing the lineup combinations game. But on the offense, when Anthony Edwards is on the court, the Timberwolves offense, in terms of net points per 100 possessions, is the 10th best offense in the NBA. When he's on the court, 117.8 points per 100 possessions. So 10th best when he's on the court. When he's off the court, it's the 27th ranked offense in the NBA. 109.7 points per 100 possessions. Now, you could probably play this game, I haven't done the legwork on, like, when you take Embiid off the court, when you take the, you know, any given team's most important offensive player, you're going to see a drop off. But you'd like to see something better than 27th when Anthony Edwards is not in the game. And so I think that is my off yesterday's game. And then just in general going forward, who besides Anthony Edwards and Karl Anthony Towns can create microwave offense for this team? Or is it, to bring the Jordan McLaughlin conversation into the mix, is it just a better backup point guard organizer? We know what Conley can do as an organizer, but he's not going to play 48 minutes. So who can come in for another 15 or 20 minutes and at least be a better organizer so that you're creating more open shots? Maybe it's not one guy coming off the bench scoring 18 or 20, but it's just a better organizer creating more open looks. That is my biggest concern. It's kind of a micro concern because at the end of the day, the way they're currently doing business, they're going to win like 50 or 55 games. They're going to be hosting a playoff series in the first round, and they're probably going to win that playoff series.
Mm-hmm.
But if we want to compare this team to the best teams in the league and a team that can make a run 2-3 rounds deep, NBA finals deep, they need to find a way to generate offense. I would say they need to find a way to generate more offense even with Anthony Edwards on the court, but especially when he's off the court.
All these crazy alien stories can't be true, can they? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
Yeah, and another thing too, I have some fun stats I wanted to give to you, but the Karl Anthony Towns stretch from the Celtics game up until he was injured with that leg injury, which was like probably like a week and a half ago, mm-hmm. was probably some of the most mature, best professional basketball he has ever played. I think we even said that, like, this might be the best. Then he got injured and then something went off again. He's just a lot of showing up officials, a lot of stuff on the court. I will say, watching that Knicks game, there was two sides of it. It's like, oh, that's a really just dumb decision by Carl. He's fouling. He's throwing his arms around, straight voltage. And I'm like, oh, is this ever going to get better? And then I watch him drive on that call. I don't know if you watched the whole game, but he drives. He hits Quentin Grimes, who then ping-pongs into Jalen Brunson. And it was quite possibly the worst offensive foul call I've ever seen. It happened in front of the Wolves bench. Finch challenged it. They upheld it. So I don't know. It's chicken and egg for me with that guy. Like, he does get a really bad whistle, but it's like, does he get a bad whistle because of his actions or his actions because of the bad whistle? I don't know.
Yeah.
But I will say, one of my favorite things is just, like, you know, being working, quote unquote, but looking at, like, advanced stats, going to NBA.com and looking at all the stats. So in the last 10 games, the same 10 games that I pushed back and said, hey, they're 7-3 this last 10-game stretch, their turnover percentage, which is just, like, their turnover ratio and how often they turn over the ball, the best team in the league over the last 10 games was Philly at 10.8. The Timberwolves are 30th out of 30 teams at 17.1. The 29th ranked team is the Grizzlies, and that's 14.7. If you go look at that column, every team is like, there's like 0.2 in between first and second and third and fourth. The Wolves are almost 3 percentage points worse than the 29th worst team in the league. Their assist to turnover ratio, I think the best one in the league right now is the Nuggets at 2.64. The Wolves are dead last, 30th at 1.55. And what that says, it's a lot of iso ball, it's a lot of hero ball, it's a lot of long contested shots. There's some noise in there. Like, I thought watching Ant yesterday, he had the opportunity to have 5 or 6 assists, but his teammates just didn't make shots, which goes back to, I don't know how good of a shooting team this team is if Mike Conley's not on fire. So there are issues. There are holes to poke. But there's 10-game segments for the Celtics that are kind of weird, or the Sixers, too. So can they clean them up? Can they learn from this? Again, it's January 2nd. If this is April 2nd, I'd be way more concerned. But this is part of the reward that this team, in my opinion, deserves for getting out of the gates so hot and so fast, is that now they can kind of have some bumps and bruises this month. But as long as they're learning from it and getting better, and that's kind of what you see when you don't lose 2 games in a row, right? Like, that's a sign of growth, and like, we learn from our mistakes. So big game against the Pelicans on Wednesday at home, 14-1. I would imagine that's another raucous atmosphere. But if they lose that by 15 and they turn the ball over, 21 times, then it's like, okay, we need to have a discussion. But for now, I'm just not there.
On the cat thing, excuse me.
Oh, you're getting all emotional.
Getting choked up just thinking about my favorite player, cat. Howls and Growls, Jake Painting had a tweet from a couple days ago. And I actually think this is a great summation of Karl-Anthony Towns' career. I'll just read you the tweet, and then we can talk about it. He said, "The chasm between Cat's worst and his best is the widest for any star in the NBA, I think. He's usually a huge boon for the team, but when he isn't, he becomes very close to unplayable sometimes, and it's just a weird dichotomy. There's no real middle ground for him." This is a great way of, I feel like, I've been trying to explain this for like 3 or 4 years, and sometimes I just get mad at his worst. When he plays at his worst, I just get mad and emotional and call him a clown on a post-game podcast. This was a very level-headed way of laying it out from Jake Painting, Howls and Growls on Twitter, that at his best, he is a unicorn. Mm-hmm. When he's playing at his best, and you actually saw it for spurts in that Knicks game yesterday. He had three real clunkers after coming back from the injury. Foul trouble yesterday, but I mean, he was bringing the Wolves. It was like him and Jordan McLaughlin were just bringing the Timberwolves back in that game. When he's hitting the floaters off one leg, the three pointers at the top of the key, rebounding, blocking shots, making the right pass. For stretches, I don't want to be misconstrued here. For stretches, he plays like one of the five best players in the NBA throughout games and seasons, or a month. You know, that month you talk about between the Boston meltdown, where he had like 13 combined turnovers and fouls, and he was the only thing that was dragging the Wolves down that night. At his best, he is one of the 5 or 10 best players in the NBA. But he can't repeat it consistently enough like a Jokic. Like, Jokic can go out there literally every night and just give you the same performance, and Embiid is at that point too. But at his worst, I don't disagree with Jake here when he says he's close to unplayable at his worst. I agree. There's some games like in the Memphis playoff series a couple years ago where it's like, man, he's just out there like losing his mind and committing fouls, and he's not learning his lesson from what the officials are allowing him to do or not. I guess my question to you is, what do you think of that assessment that he has? I'll say he has the widest variance of any player in the NBA. At his best, he can be a top 5 or 10 player. At his worst, you might be better off without him on the court some nights. What do you think of that? And are there any other players in recent NBA history you can think of that are that wide of variance players from what you see at their best versus their worst?
I mean, the first one, first of all, yeah, Howls and Growls, if you don't already subscribe, go subscribe. Jake is awesome at this. Great newsletter, great YouTube. I mean, the way you worded that question, the first one that comes to mind is Draymond, right? Like, when he's at his worst, it's literally...
can't make a shot. Punching and choking opponents, flagrant foul.
Yeah, like he's literally assaulting people. And at his best, he's one of the three best defenders in the league. So I'm with you. And again, I would agree that ever since Carl came back, I think he came back for the Thunder game. He didn't look like himself. Like, he didn't literally look in shape for that. And a week off even can really, or even a couple games can really lower your stamina. But ever since that weird injury, it's just been different again. And it's not even the lack of production, because you said it too yesterday. Against the Knicks, I think he had 2 or 3 straight baskets, and then in transition, it was either a step back three or just in transition, he hits a three, makes it a 4-point game. That's the unicorn stuff. That's like, even the yesterday's broadcast on NBA TV was the Knicks side of it, but you can hear it in Mike Breen's voice. He was like, oh God, like that's unguardable. But it's just the other stuff. And I don't want to, I got to be honest, because I think he's 28 years old. I'm more pro Cat than you, but you just got to wonder in this last stretch when he's been kind of weird, then that's when like that we're not going to talk too much about the Lakers game, that Jaden McDaniels technical after he fouled LeBron for the and one and Jaden fouled out. I'm the biggest Jaden McDaniels fan there is. That was not the worst moment, because he punched a wall and was off the putts. That was the second worst moment of like his career. That was so bad that I was convinced my scar tissue and PTSD kicked. I thought they were going to lose that game after that.
Yeah.
And I just wonder, too, if you're Carl, at the minimum, you just have to not do some of this stuff anymore, because this team, sadly, has some immaturity on it still, because guys like Ant are 22 and Jaden is 23. Like, you know, we have such high expectations and they've built everything around these guys, but they still, at the end of the day, are what they are. And you need Carl that when it's not working, he's just, and maybe this is me propping him up, he's still, in my mind, too smart to be doing some of this stuff. And it's like, okay, if you just don't have it today offensively, they're not going to give you a call and they're not going to let you drive. Just get rebounds and set your other teammates up. I think he still is really selfless, and I think he does want to win, but you doesn't always come across the screen for 48 minutes. Basically nothing triggers me in sports other than like maybe watching Jaren Hall play football and showing up your teammates or showing up officials. That stuff just is like reminds me of work and culture, and I don't like that. So he's got to cut that out, but I don't know. I want to see it for if he does it again on at home on Wednesday against the Pelicans, I'm going to start to be more concerned. I'm kind of hoping it's a random holiday blip. I mean, all we've done as a collective society for 10 days is just eat sugar and drink and not be very active. So maybe that's just for Carl to blame as well. But he can't keep doing this as, you know, a leader of this team. I know we think about Kyle and Mike in their 30s and Rudy, but I've called Carl the ceiling of this playoff run. Like, if he's good, this team could be really good. He can't nuke them anymore. Enough is enough. It's been like 8 years. I don't really have anything else to say on that. It's just been frustrating.
I'll give you two more just thinking of players that at their best, like wide, high variance players were at their best. Holy cow, that dude for a month is one of the best players in the league. But then there's other times where what's happening here? DeMarcus Cousins comes to mind.
Yeah.
From like seven or 8 years ago. Where I just pulled up to his game log from 2005, just like one of his big seasons with the Kings. It's 2015-16. And it's with the Kings. So he literally has games where he's dropping like 56 and 12 on 70% from the field, 48 points, 13 rebounds, you know, bombing threes, getting in line. But then he has a bunch of games where he shoots 17%, 19%. Fouling out, six turnovers, probably getting technicals, spazzing out, taking dumb shots, right? D'Lo's another one, dude. We saw it firsthand for 3 years where on some nights, and he did it against the Wolves a few nights ago too, or it was one of the two games where he was like 1-for-6 or something, you know, coming off the bench. He'll give you those for 2 weeks, and then he'll carry you with 29 points and a bunch of threes in the second half. So that, I don't know, if people in the comments have examples of other super high variance players, we'd love to get that list rocking.
And I should add too, because the difficulty with today's pod is that you and I are trying to catch up for a week and a half. So was it as egregious yesterday against the Knicks?
No, I don't think so.
I thought he played a average to above average game. But the one that's really sticking in my mind, and we're bringing it up 4 days later, is that he had 9 points and 9 rebounds against the Lakers. He took 7 shots. He had 5 fouls and he had 5 turnovers. So he had more turnovers and fouls combined than points or rebounds. And he was the only player, I think, in the starting five that was like negative. Like he was minus 23 in 29 minutes. They lost that game. They almost lost that game for a variety of reasons, including LeBron's shoe size. But he was like the one that, aside from the Jaden tomfoolery of getting a technical on top of everything else bad that he did on that play, Carl really almost sunk him in that game. So they just, if Carl's going to be the ceiling, he's also got to be aware that he is the floor. And back to Jake's point, like when it's at his worst, the floor is almost non-existent. It's like, I don't know if we can, and it's compounded too, right, Phil? Because if he's really bad and he's out of stray voltage, all that stuff, then you can just put in Naz Reid, who's just going to give you a lot. And Naz wasn't great yesterday, but in the Lakers game, he might have been their second best player behind Ant. So a lot of, again, to the rant at the top, there are holes in this. I do ask that if you are concerned that you maybe step back, go look at another team, take a sample size of the Sixers or the Clippers. Like all these teams are trying to work through stuff, peaking, valleying, whatever, throughout the next kind of couple months when these teams really do kind of hem and haw over their schedule. But I'm not concerned about it other than just some of the personality stuff and the getting away from the team basketball, you know, just it's when I watch Ant play, when I watch Jaden play, they're calling their number a lot. Ant had that quote like a week ago where he was basically said,
I'm just going to score.
Like every time I get the ball, I'm just going to shoot. And it's like, that's funny. I love him and his energy, but it's not, I would imagine Finch didn't love that. I would imagine Finch is like, okay, so every time the ball touches your hands, you're just going to put it up. That's not
ideal. And refuse to check out of the game when I send a sub over to. Maturity things here on and off the court that Ant might want to.
But in conclusion for that, this team needs more adversity because we've seen how they handled it last year and it wasn't great, but they did, you know, all things aside, win a bunch of games and make the playoffs. The expectations now with full strength and some schedule luck, and even tomorrow night, they play the Pelicans on the second night of a back-to-back for the Pelicans. This is where you're going to figure out if they can make an April or May run, is some of this adversity. And their adversity is minor. Bad calls, shots not going in, whatever. But this is where you start to kind of grow that thick skin of, can we do this when we have to go on the road, you know, late April, early May against New Orleans or the Sacramento Kings or something like that?
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's have the Jordan McLaughlin discussion here. Because
McLaughlin,
this
as they called him yesterday on the call. Yeah. Like, just get his name right. Like, it's not Anthony Towns. Like, it's not Goubert. It's like, it's Jordan McLaughlin. He just had four assists in a row. Like, maybe look up the pronunciation. Anyway.
And he was a plus 13. They basically brought him in as kind of a last ditch. Hey, we need someone to get things going here. Mike Conley can't be the only organizer. And Mike Conley was not great or bouncy yesterday either. He just looked up. Maybe you're right. Maybe everyone is eating the popped corn combo packs and stuff.
I went three straight days without a shower over the break. So
that's probably Mike Conley yesterday too. but McLaughlin comes in and he's a plus 13, an organizer. He gets the tempo moving. Most importantly, he knocked down a 3-pointer when they left him wide open. That's to me, that's one of the biggest things for him, is you can't just not make threes. He was awful after coming back from the calf injury last year. And there was a couple games they tried to bring him in late in the season a couple times. I think even in the playoffs, you're like, dude, get back to the bench for a second. I don't know what's happening here. But before that calf injury, people can go back and listen to the early Flagrant Howls episodes from like the first 2 months of last year. And we love to do the lineup combination updates on this show. And almost every Wolves lineup combination, when you rank the best five-man lineups, the best three-man combos, right? Almost all of the top ones included Jordan McLaughlin in the first 2 months of last year. That was before Mike Conley came around, before the calf injury. If you're getting all of the sudden now a fully healthy early 2022-23 season version of Jordan McLaughlin, and he's going to hit some threes, and I know that's a lot of ifs, ands, and wishful thinking there, I'm interested. Because to your point earlier in the show, dude, like, they've been running an eight-man rotation out there. It's December. There are 3-4 months left in the regular season, and they're literally playing like eight-man rotations the last couple weeks because they don't trust Shake Milton. Troy Brown Jr. is kind of like an 8 to 10 minutes guy. I don't know how sustainable this is unless you get somebody else coming in to be the ninth person to be, you know, 15, 20 minutes off the bench. But that was very encouraging yesterday, Kyle.
Yeah, and he has to be a part of the rotation moving forward just for a couple weeks. He, from like a football analogy, he's like a change of pace back. Like, he'll never be able to be your RB1 and start and get 35 minutes a game because he's limited physically.
Jerick McKinnon, you know?
Yeah, yeah. He's limited physically. He's not a great shooter. And on defense, especially in the playoffs, he'll get hunted. But, and this is part of the benefit of being 24-8 and having this kind of extended runway to kind of figure some stuff out on the fly and not hurt your standings, is, you know, did Mike Conley go 2-for-6 against the Knicks because of defensive rotations from New York? I don't think so. Was it because he was hungover? I don't know. Mike is like the best guy in the world. I would imagine he drank a lot of like Pedialyte, but he might just be run down. Like, we see it with LeBron. Like, LeBron will give you 38-10-4, but that next night's probably going to be a stinker. Like, age is real and you cannot defy, you know, father time. So they just need, I don't think they're ever just going to sit Mike. I think that wish of mine is gone. I don't think they're going to rest guys. Also, I've been pretty big about like, hey, can Wendell Moore get a chance? Can Leonard Miller, Josh Minot? All those guys probably still, unfortunately, need more time to marinate. I checked out an actual Iowa Wolves game over the week, and Leonard Miller got ejected because he threw the ball in the stands. And again, dude, I think he's 19 or 20, but
yeah,
that's the pushback to some of my, you know, like, hey, give these guys a chance. They probably know they're not ready. But if that's the case and you're young guys, I mean, basically no one in Tim Connolly's draft classes has remotely hit, but I don't think that's bad. I think they're just all young, and the plan is to incorporate them when the books get more expensive. But if you don't have that, you do need to then look internally and be like, do we have anyone else on the roster? Jordan McLaughlin highlights that, or back to Shake Milton, Kyle Anderson, whatever, do we have to go make a trade?
Yeah.
And I think this team is still one player short. It's probably a guard. They don't have a lot of guys that can dribble. I've said that for years. Like, they don't have a ton of ball handlers on the team. It's kind of concerning, but for now it's Jordan McLaughlin's role, and I think he's done enough to show Finch that, hey, I deserve to get, you know, 12 to 14 minutes.
Yeah, there's like the recipe for turnovers. Guys who can't handle the ball with great carefulness. And then Rudy Gobert, for as many great qualities as he brings, still is sort of like a 7-footer with ping pong paddles for hands. Yeah. And like there's going to be anywhere between two and five passes per game that kind of like rattle off his hand for a turnover. And you just have to sort of live with that. So, but yeah, like keep an eye on Jordan McLaughlin here these next few games. He's going to get minutes after the 12 minutes he played very successfully against the Knicks. I mean, that game was he was literally the last ditch effort to keep starters in the game. I feel like that if that game would have gone further sideways, then the Wolves just pull their starters for the fourth quarter and rest up. But instead, they went from being down by 20 to single digits, and now we're hunting for a win, cut it down to four.
Jordan McLaughlin has played 62 total minutes this season, and he has one turnover.
Yeah.
Like, that. For what I just said, like, turnovers are, it's not even Kyle, it's not the lack of spacing, all that stuff. Those are issues, but turnovers are the number one thing that this team is struggling with. They're, when you pull the turnovers away, like their half-court offense is pretty good. Their half-court defense is electric. But when you turn the ball over, you're no longer in a half-court defense. You're in transition. That's when they get cooked. But 62 minutes and one turnover, that might just be it. If they can just get Jordan McLaughlin to play 12 minutes three times a week, give you 9 points, three assists, a steal, and no turnovers, that will do so much for the rest of this formula. So, yeah, congratulations, Jordan McLaughlin. Your 2024 resolution is play more basketball.
We will get to Kyle's question of the week here, but since we're catching up on like a week and a half not having potted together, let's go down basketball reference lane here. You pointed out that this year's Timberwolves have tallied their 24th win a couple games ago, matching the season total of the 2008-2009 Timberwolves, who finished 24-58. So congratulations to this year's Wolves team, passing up one of the great Wolves teams in history. The 2008-2009 Wolves. I'm going to quiz you here. 3 minutes on the clock, Kyle. I'm going to put you on the spot right now. Can you tell me who the two coaches were for the Wolves that year? That's right. One of them got fired, and then somebody else stepped in. And can you name as many of the 17 players as possible who played at least one game for that 08-09 Wolves team?
Like a week ago?
In 3 minutes.
A week ago when someone had asked me this, like, A, do you have a spreadsheet that tracks all this stuff? And yes, it's all I contribute now to Twitter. And I have all these tweets drafted for down the road. But when I put that one together, my favorite part now, if you go look at these on Twitter, is like finding the photos. That's so great. The one that you're mentioning includes Randy Foy, Kevin Love, Mike Miller, Al Jefferson. And everyone I'm looking at their basketball reference pages, and now I'm totally blanking.
I'll give you those. So Foy, Miller, Jefferson, and who's the other one? You said Foy.
Mike Miller.
And Mike Kevin Miller, Love. Yeah. Mike Miller, oddly, came over here as one of the great three-point shooters in the NBA at the time and just refused to take threes.
Yes.
That's one of the weirdest. Like, I sat there. I went to almost every home game that season as a fledgling part-time media member trying to work my way up. And the amount of wide-open threes, if you look at his career numbers leading into that season, so he was with Orlando and then Memphis and averaging 7 threes a game, 5, 4.5. And then that year, he decided, I'm only going to take 3 threes a game. And it was like wide open threes he passed. I don't know if his agent was in his ear. I don't know what his deal was. But you got four out of the
17. Only other two I can remember is, I'm pretty sure, just order of operations and how this team drafted. Corey Brewer's on that team. And then you said there's two coaches that year, 08, 09. I think Kevin McHale was like the team's GM. So then he came, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think he fired someone and then became the coach. Was it Randy Whitman?
There you go. Nice
okay.
job.
And the only reason I remember any of this is because that was the end of what I would deem an era. And then it was the next year, as I was, again, scrolling through 09 Timberwolves photos. There's not many. That's when the Con Rambis tenure started. So
that was the famous 09 draft came out of all of this.
And so what I learned by going back and looking at this was the 2008-2009 Minnesota Timberwolves that finished 24-58. That was actually one of the more enjoyable teams. They had some fun-ish players. Kevin Love was fat and awesome. And then it's when it got really
dark. Al Jefferson, 23-11.
Al Jefferson. Okay. Who else? Like, any other names?
Love, Sebastian Telfair.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
43 games. I'll just go through the list here. Craig Smith started 31 games. Rashad McCants was still only 24 years old. Rodney Carney, Kevin Ollie, who went on to be the coach of UConn and won a national championship, right? Brian Cardinal, remember that dude from that dude was like balding his sophomore year at Purdue. Sheldon Williams, Duke, right? Wasn't he?
Yep. Dated, well, I think he was married to Candace Parker for a while.
Wow.
The more you know.
Jason Collins, Bobby Brown, Mark Madsen was still on that team. And then Calvin Booth played one game for the 2008-2009 Wolves.
Interesting. Yeah, that's all I've got right now. I'll try to, I don't know if I'm going to tweet much in 2024, but if I have any creativeness left in me, I will. But that's been fun for me just to, every time they win a game and they're like, now they're 24-8, now they're 25-9. It's like, oh my God, there were seasons where they had 25 wins and 120 losses. How did we do it? Why are we still here? What is the point? And it's therapeutic for me. So,
no, it's I think it's what's keeping us all logging back into Twitter, seeing which picture does Kyle choose historically. give us in the last few minutes here, Kyle's question of the week, if you could, sir.
Okay, I do want to say quick, I was in Corvallis, Oregon this last weekend, and on the same night, did you watch Lakers Wolves?
Yes.
Did you go?
No. I was mostly just sitting around drinking cocktails and doing nothing on couches for the last week. So
I was going to say, so LeBron's birthday or whatever on Saturday, the Wolves, that game was crazy. It was hilarious to watch on Twitter. I was actually a couple blocks over watching Bronny James. USC was playing in Corvallis. Yeah. I went to a random game, but just scouting because, again, in my mind, the Wolves will draft Bronny James this summer with the 29th pick, and then they'll sign LeBron and everything will be fixed.
For $1 million bucks? Oh, it's going to be great.
But no, my question of the week, you know, it's again, Happy New Year's to everyone that's listening. You and I are back now on 2 times a week. We're going to have a bunch of guests. The pod is back. We'll climb the charts again. We've given our competition a chance to catch up, just like the Wolves have. I'm a big resolutions guy. And I think a new year, a fresh start of anything is great. Also, coinciding on a Monday is just chef's kiss. Let's not even make it Wolves related, maybe. Just give me a Minnesota sports 2024 resolution from the one and only Phil Mackey.
So I got yelled at. We did some of these for Scorn Our Social Media, and I recorded mine before the Twins signed a random reliever that has the highest walk rate in baseball.
Just missed out on Ohtani. Damn.
And so I said, I want the Twins to sign literally anyone. And they did. They did sign a reliever. So I would say for the Vikings, my resolution for you is, this has to be the year that you finally get back in the mix in the draft for a franchise quarterback. Don't be afraid. Okay, I was telling this to Judd the other day on Purple Daily. 60-plus years of Vikings history, this franchise has accomplished everything possible, okay? It's like when you're meeting with your long-term financial planner, and you're like, hey, tell me what to do. I don't know what to do. And they say, well, how risky do you want to be with your long-term investments? But do you want to be like, you know, they show you like a scale of emojis where it's like, you want to be super frugal and, you know, basically just like keep your money in a savings account? Or do you want to throttle? Do you want to put all your money on a hot startup and be risky, right? Or is there somewhere between? If you're the Vikings, stop playing it safe with these good but not great quarterbacks making money, Kirk Cousins being the latest. Go find your 10 to 12 year franchise quarterback of the future. And see what happens. And if you fail, it's okay. We're still going to be here. All the fans are still going to be here. Christian Ponder was a bust. They won 11 games 2 years later. Teddy Bridgewater broke his leg. They still went to the NFC Championship game 2 years after that. Tavares Jackson was a bust. Okay, move on from him. NFC Championship game a year later. Like, it all works out. It's a well-run franchise. So let's get a little more risky with our Vikings investments here as we look forward to the draft. That's my
appreciate that. I love riling you up because until you give me the password or the login to Purple Daily, I'm just going to keep having my 2 minutes of Vikings thoughts on this. I'm totally with you. And then from a Wolves perspective, truly, all jokes aside, like especially, again, when you're over the holidays and you got family stuff going on and health and stuff, I'm going to, and it's going to suck for some, the haters, but I'm just going to have more fun. I think this could be, it has a chance, this 2024 calendar year has a chance to be like the best year in Timberwolves franchise history, and I'm all in. We got a short cutoff today. We didn't even get to get into this, but like the ownership stuff continues to move forward at a non-worrisome rate, like it seems like Alex and Mark are going to get that other 40% and take over, I would be shocked. I'm just put it out there. I would be shocked if we don't get a Kevin Garnett jersey retirement sometime this year. Probably not this season. Mm-hmm. Maybe something like October, November next year.
A-Rod's been massaging that thing
for a while here. Behind the scenes, but I think they'll have a jersey retirement. I think you're going to see, we get to have a draft pick again. That'll be fun.
Wait, what? I thought the Wolves, wait a second. I was told.
Oh, that's right.
The Wolves traded all their first round picks. They don't have any first round picks.
Not until 2062. Speaking of which, go look at the Donovan Mitchell trade. How much fun has that been? Also, why doesn't Walker Kessler start? Why did they give Mike Conley for free? Anyway, back to positivity. I think this could be a really fun year, and I appreciate everyone that supported us and listened to the pod, but I told you before we recorded, shout out to my wife, shout out to your wife. She had to put up with all my takes last week because I had nowhere else to dump them. I think this is going to be really fun. I think they're going to figure some stuff out. They'll probably make a deal, but if you give me a second round, third round playoff matchup paired with a new rookie and maybe a Kevin Garnett jersey retirement, I think it's going to be a really fun year. So as the Vikings try to figure out their mess at quarterback and all their financial stuff, and the Twins, again, just signed a bunch of players that you create in baseball video games, the Timberwolves run the city. This is a state of basketball until further notice, and I'm really excited to just follow along and cheer for it.
Amen, my friend. Good to be back potting with you here on Flagrant Howls. If you guys could give us a like and a subscribe, click on the Score North YouTube channel and a 5-star rating and a positive review on Apple and Spotify. It helps spread the word about this awesome community of Timberwolves fans. He's Kyle. That's his mustache. I'm Phil. And this is your favorite Timberwolves lifestyle podcast.